Welcome to the Breakpoint Show, the podcast dedicated to analyzing the Netflix docuseries Breakpoint episode by episode. I am Gil Gross with Alex Gruskin. This is season 2, episode 2, The Future Is Yours. Needless to say, if you did not watch season 2, episode 1, The Curse, please, well, look, you can do whatever you want, but theoretically, we recommend you go back, watch that, then come back to this show. I believe this episode just started with this dramatic opening shot of Holger Rune watching the Australian Open trophy ceremony.
Yeah, it was a fantastic episode. And I will say one compliment to the makers of this show, one of many. You don't have to watch the previous episode to dive into this series at any given point. If you are a fan of a specific player, obviously, through 1 and 2, they talk Sabalenka, Rune, and a little Alcaraz, obviously, here in 2 as well. You could just watch these episodes on their own. And I do like the fact that perhaps here in season 2 even more so, it's character-driven more so than, as you alluded to in episode 1, event-driven. And yeah, I mean, right off the bat, you understand why the title of this episode is The Future Is Yours, because right away they give you a close-up of that baby-faced Holger Rune, and you're like, all right, we're certainly talking about the future.
You're totally right. Yeah, you don't need to watch episode 1 to enjoy this. If you are more interested in Holger Rune and for some reason you're not interested in the Sabalenka story, yeah, you could start with this and be completely fine. It's not like, you know, this isn't Ozark. You're not going to be lost out here. So I'm just really glad that Holger Rune got this kind of focus. Can we just start with that decision? Because obviously that's a part of producing this show, is we need to figure out which characters in the landscape of tennis are we going to focus on. And we talked in the last episode just how good Sabalenka is as a character because of her energy. Yes, she has a great story. Yes, you got to show her winning the Australian Open, but she's just like a really very charismatic and infectious character. Rune, it's not that he's similar to Aryna Sabalenka, but I think he's a top three most interesting player to watch 2023, 2024, and beyond. Where he's at in his career, especially as he matures, especially as I think we can agree he hasn't really achieved what he is likely to achieve in the near future. I'm all about the Holger Rune focus here. I think he was necessary to include in season 2.
Jim Courier said it best in episode 1 about Sabalenka. It applies to Rune as well. He's someone who wears his emotions very clearly on his face. You know exactly what he is going through at any given moment of his career. And that's what made both Sabalenka and Rune such compelling follows in these first 2 episodes. I also think it's a similar theme. If you are a fan of sport in general, what compels you? Always young, rising talents. They're always going to get the attention of the sporting world. And right away, how Holger Rune is introduced, I jumped up the rankings pretty quickly last season, as he liked to allude to it. It is clear he is ascending from outside the top 100 to end the year top 10. You're a rising star within the sport. And that message is communicated clearly, as is the message right away that Holger Rune cares about one thing. He has one singular focus in life, and that is becoming the best tennis player he can become. And obviously, there are more details we'll get into. It's as finite of a detail as his mom still makes his bed, to, as you know, again, big picture of a detail as he's in and out of coaching decisions because he wants to do what's best for himself. He demands a coach who is always going to bring out the best of him at any given moment. And it's just so abundantly clear that Holger Rune cares about tennis and his athletic career more than anything else. And as a fan, if you are a fan clicking on a sporting docuseries, something like Breakpoint, that's the storyline that's going to compel you regardless of who that player is.
Yeah, dude. He has a hunger and a killer instinct that is different. Mm-hmm. It's not, and so many people have been on Breakpoint. How many people have come on Breakpoint and be like, I want to be number one? One of them majors, right? That's not novel at all. But for some reason, the way Rune kind of goes about it, there's a certain, like, even the way he just looks at Novak and he's like, time for the young guys, let's go. Like, it's time. I think he left his hotel room, said something like, time for the next generation to come. And he gives a, he pounds his fist on his hand because he is actually like, No, I need to kick Novak's This is enough. And when he's watching the Wimbledon final from the couch, Alcaraz versus Djokovic, and when he's watching the Australian Open trophy ceremony, Novak's lifting another trophy, you actually get the sense that he's like, this, I hate this. And then like the way it ends, and I'm fine skipping with to the end here, with Alcaraz winning Wimbledon, and Holger's like, I'm happy to give him a 2-0 lead, but let's let's count when our career is over. Who else, like, serious question here, is there anybody else who watches Alcaraz beat Djokovic and their reaction is just like, all right, yeah, he's got a 2-0 lead, but I'm gonna win more slams than Alcaraz?
Well, he said it during the episode when they showed, and it's a video, if you are a fan of tennis, you've seen a photo from many a times, Runa, Alcaraz, the same age, they competed in the prestigious junior event, Le Petit AS in Paris. They play doubles together.
The pronunciation?
Why, do you always call it Le Petit A?
Yeah.
I've always gone with AS. We can leave that up to scholars to discuss in a different point.
The French will be in the comments section.
Yeah, they always are. Them and their revolutions. But you look, you know, this is so, not to plug the mini break here, but I explained to Jeff Sackman how I used to do a bit for my little brother explaining all of the presidents. I'd go through order and give him just enough of history to be like, so he knows something about it. And so out of nowhere, Jeff, questioning seeming the legitimacy of my bit, goes, Rutherford B. Hayes. And I go, look, man, we're just reconstructing and trying to hold on. Like, we're not going to accomplish much in these post-Civil War years. And he starts laughing. He goes, hey, he went to a different one. I think he was like, all right. Then I was like, no, I really like doing James Buchanan, something similar pre-Civil War. And he goes, you know what? That's just true enough to be funny. And I passed his test, and I'm so proud of it. And so that's what I feel like I just did with that revolutionary joke. Anyways, point is to say, like, Holger Rune in this episode goes, if you would have asked us at that time, do we both think we'd be in Wimbledon quarterfinals? I think we both would have said yes. And it's just a degree of honesty from Holger that you see throughout the course of this episode is, look, he's cocky. He's very self-confident. He needs to be. He knows that's what it takes to be this successful, to have the degree of success he wants in this sport. You have to be self-obsessed. You have to be self-driven. You have to be all the self-related adjectives, much like I am self-centered and relitigating some jokes to try and see if you listeners will enjoy them as well. Anyways, he has that trait, like, and it is captivating for fans, fan or not, you are captivated by it.
Yeah. And I love it. And you're right. It is crucial to his success. Like, seriously, is Grigor Dimitrov, like, not to pick on him, but, you know, he's a top player who's a little bit older. Is he watching the Australian Open trophy ceremony in 2022 and feeling like legitimately annoyed? No. Does he watch Alcaraz win a slam? And now I'll go younger. Let's go Tsitsipas or Medvedev or Zverev. Alcaraz wins Wimbledon and they're like, damn it, he's up 2-0, but I'll catch him in the end. No. No, none of them have that mentality. That's what makes Holger different. Is that fair?
I don't know if none of them have that mentality. He has it in the most pronounced way possible. And even to the degree of he is watching tennis at all times. Like, he's at the Australian final. He's watching the Wimbledon final. He's on his phone. They catch him. He's like, I'm watching highlights. And he giggles. He's like, you caught me. I'm watching the highlights. Like, of course I am, man. I'm 10 in the world. It's sick that there are Twitter highlights of me. Like, he is obsessed with this sport. It is the thing that drives him above all else. And, like, again, to the title, the future is yours. You start to wonder, what does that future look like for him? Because you feel like this is a guy who is going to do whatever it takes to maximize himself, even if there are some self-related stumbles along the way.
Also, Jim Courier explained it super, super well, where he was like, these guys, Alcaraz and Rune, they come up, they're still optimistic.
Yeah,
they have no scar tissue. That's a great point, right? Because when, like, Tsitsipas is a perfect example of this. When he came up and he was playing the big guys, he did expect to win, and he did win early on. But it feels like, you know, he started to lose. It feels like that takes away something. Like, you almost get a part of you. They take your soul a little bit. And Rune and Alcaraz, they haven't had a, they're still a young, unscarred, un, untethered soul.
Well, to that point, and part of it is because Alcaraz still isn't the most comfortable with his English, and this wasn't what he meant to say, but in saying it, it communicated some honesty to Djokovic in the post-Wimbledon final trophy ceremony. You know, when I was born, you were already winning titles. And, I mean, again, is that literally 100% true? No, because 2004 Djokovic, it wasn't, the, or 2003, whatever, wasn't the peaks of his powers. But, like, in a broader sense, absolutely. Like, as Alcaraz was 7, 8, 9 years old, really becoming a fan of the sport, that's when Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, they're all starting to reach or at the peaks of their power. And, like, again, you grew up watching them. You didn't grow up losing to them. You grew up dreaming about have the opportunity to beat them. And obviously to see both Alcaraz, Runa defeat Novak in this episode speaks to the fact that these guys are have these remarkable dreams and they're living them already as recently as this 2023 yeah. season. And it speaks to why this episode was appropriate in this series and such a joy to watch.
And he kind of acts his age in a way where it's almost like it does feel like he's 19. It's hard to understand whether it be the presence of his mom, which he'll discuss, or maybe even just how he looks. You called him baby-faced Runa at the start. It does feel like you buy into, oh, this 19-year-old's super talented, coming up top 10 in the world, and he's trying to take Novak down and win majors and have a better career than Carlos Alcaraz.
His mom was dressing him. Like, and by the way, I am 28 years old. I will still do that if my mom is with me and there are clothes being bought. Of course, I want her opinion. That's the one that matters most. But he's at the Nike shoot. Do you like the hat? Do you like the headband? There's the scene in his room. What shorts best complement this shirt or whatever it may be? Like, she made his bed. You can feel this is a guy who still needs some parental guidance because, to her point, he's turning from the boy into the man. I think his mom says that throughout the course of the episode. And yet he clearly is already a man on the tennis court. Like, the skill set, the physicality is there.
All right. I wasn't going to start with Annika Runa, but since we're there, let's start with her. I really like her. And I think that Holger has maybe gotten some crap on the internet, like, oh, you know, you need to be more independent or whatever. And look, tennis parents, boy, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Like, anybody who's been around the sport knows that a parent can make it or break it. I think she's kind of on the money where she doesn't call the shots. She's not a micromanager. Holger is in charge. But she facilitates, like, she's genuinely his manager. If you want to sponsor him or have him for an interview, like, you email his mom. If, like, she is going to be his manager, but she's not going to overstep her bounds from a tennis standpoint and be like, no, we don't need Lars Christensen. Like, I'll do it. I'm the coach. She doesn't do that, like some tennis parents do. And, you know, they think they know the sport well enough to step into that role. And it feels like she is just there for the unconditional support and the facilitation. Yeah, like, stuff maybe happens within their relationship that Netflix will never be able to reveal because it's just stuff that's too much behind closed doors. But from everything I've seen in that relationship, and I liked getting a closer look at this, it seems like Annika Runa is exactly what you want in a tennis parent.
Holger Runa is the president of the operation, but yeah, his mom is his chief of staff. There's no doubt about that. All the decisions run through her. And at some point, there has to be a degree of independence. I'm sure there will be a point where he won't want his mom coming to his apartment to pick him up, to take him to the next location, just because at a certain stage of life, you just don't want that to be your mechanism of transportation for all these different things. But I agree. It never felt disruptive or deconstructive to whatever he was trying to accomplish, if those are the words I guess to use it that first come to my mind. Like, I completely agree with you. And, you know, again, it was fascinating to see, because clearly Holger Rune has some serious thoughts about his own career, about he talked about it. He expects perfection. That is what he is chasing. And obviously 19-year-olds of any ilk are going to have unreasonable expectations and for the immediacy of things happening and all these different things. And obviously his mom seems to be a stabilizing force on him. Like, it's great to have that sort of person in your life, that sort of influence who you know will help keep things steady in what is otherwise a really chaotic time for a guy making his rise to the top of the game. Again, I'm happy that they didn't shy away from that relationship, if that makes sense, that they made quite clear the influence with which she has over all things in the Holgaruna operation. But it's, I didn't feel like if this is a really silly thing. I think if my mom could go back and change anything, and look, she is an incredibly accomplished OB-GYN, like she figured out her stuff. But if she could take any opportunity back, it would have been to be a tiger mom when it comes to tennis parents. Cause you're right. Like, tennis parents can be crazy. They can be very controlling and all of these different things. And I just don't think she's that in an unhealthy way. I think she says, all right, his goal is to be the best tennis player in the world. I'm going to dedicate all the things to do all the little things right to make this hopefully possible.
Yeah, but I'm also going to let him grow up, let him screw up, let him make decisions, and I'm not going to be his tennis coach.
Yeah.
Because that, I think, can be one of the bigger issues, especially when parents come in and they're clashing with the coaches that they've tried to hire to help. And you can talk to any coach at pretty much any level, and they'll tell you that parents can be really, really tough to deal with, especially those who think that you know, they need to have a hand in the specifics of the coaching.
And I want to talk about, obviously, Mortelieu in a second, because speaking of coaching, he plays a massive role, certainly, in this episode.
Yeah.
But my last note on Annika Runa, because it's the best scene in this episode, without question, Gil, because there are two types of people. There are those sorts of people who play the podcast, and then there are those sorts of people who are the podcast, Gil. And I like to think, sometimes you play the podcast. I am the podcast. And I wish I had a cigarette in my hand like she did to say that quote for you, because watching her say that, cigarette in hand, you know, some people play the point, Holger, but Novak is the point. I almost cried a tear of joy. I was like, oh, Annika, I could marry you right now. Like, that is just, mwah. That is beautiful filmmaking. And one of my highlights of, no, my highlight of the episode.
That was spectacular. Just direct quote. Novak is not playing the point. Yeah. Novak is the point.
She should have taken a drag right there. And then smoke should have just started coming out of her mouth.
Oh, that was great. Okay.
By the
tennis.
Way, I missed this on the last episode, so this is also me playing makeup. Another great shot, meant to say it in episode one. Shouldn't have left it on the cutting board. Obviously, we're in the same clothes. We recorded them back to back. The scene of camera work, Sabalenka nose up, showing the photo of her dad and her going, we have the same nose. And they actually show it at an angle where you're like, oh yeah, that's the same nose. And it's like, it's really good camera work by them. So Netflix, they've done a really good job in season two so far. They stepped things up.
The tennis begins at Indian Wells, and we're just going to go to Runa versus Stan. Because there's beef, right? Yeah. And that's it. And at first I was just like, okay, where are we going with this? We started at the Australian Open. Now we're in what, round three Indian Wells? Maybe second round Indian Wells? And, you know, he loses this match, didn't play very well. I remember watching it. It got very entertaining after the first set. The first set was crap. I mean, Holger was terrible in the first set. But then it got really good. Stan wins, you know, he kind of says, you have nothing to say now, which was, you know, it wasn't a great look because Stan was just like, bro, what? But I think my big thing here is they didn't get bogged down in, oh, like we have to show the Monte Carlo final against Rublev because that's a big match, or, you know, we won Munich. Let's go do that. It's like, no, let's just do Stan because, you know, there was a bit of tension there, kind of a storyline. And also it was a good job. It was a good match to show how his emotions can get the better of him, how he can kind of not let his tennis abilities. He could almost self-sabotage his tennis abilities because he's just doesn't have his head on the court. And, you know, I think Muratoglu was, you know, being particularly critical of him in the box and after the match. I thought that was good audio. So it's like, yeah, that works. Why not go to Indian Wells and show that match?
Well, I think to your point, what they captured so perfectly is the roller coaster. That is the rise to the top, particularly for someone as volatile as Runa, and they captured it perfectly. You want to see the lows of this roller coaster? This is what happened with Stan. A petty argument from 2022 lingered over into 2023, and it affected his performance from the start. And it was miserable, and it ruined the day, and it ruined this coaching relationship for a moment, and that's how lows the low can be on this Runa experience right now.
Yeah.
The highs can be this guy can be freaking Djokovic with the same coach in his box and the exact same arrangement. And that's like, to your point, the plot points they picked weren't tournament driven. They were, we want to show you what this Runa roller coaster ride is like and why it's really fun to get on. And they nailed it with their match choices, because the Stan narrative arc is sort of perfectly indicative of what the lows of Runa look like right now.
Yeah. Well said. And then we go to Rome. Let's get to the Patrick storyline in a moment. Let's skip that for a second. We
go
to
some
Rome.
Thoughts.
Okay. I love it. It's a juicy one. We get to experience kind of the win over Djokovic, the rain delay. We get a little bit of Mohamed Layani drama with the ball mark, which is, you know, again, kind of a look at Holger.
Which I've forgotten about. Yeah.
I had forgotten too. Yeah. Didn't control the emotions that well, but then it rained. Like, how come all of these so many epic kind of tennis yeah. stories are just like, I lost my mind and then it rained and then I won. Like it goes like that. So often, we get some, a little bit of behind the scenes in the rain delay. That was kind of nice. And then again, just to kind of hammer this home, in season one, they would have been like, and then he lost to Medvedev in the final, right? We didn't get that. For the viewers of Breakpoint have no idea what happened in the tournament, because that wasn't the point. The point was he beat Novak, and then we go to Wimbledon.
It's interesting. Like, it's kind of incumbent on you now to be like, oh, how did he do there? Let me go look it up. And if that's what the show's inspiring you to do, then by the way, the show is doing its job. So I don't hate that, but I do cede your point that, yeah, if you are just a fan of this show, you're like, wait, so he beat Djokovic. I assume he won the event and obviously hasn't lost between there and the Wimbledon quarterfinal. Wow, he must have won Roland Garros as well. Like, a little bit of a blank there in between on what happened in between. But I did love and watching you struggle to come up with an Ozark for your TV show reference earlier, because you're not the biggest TV show movie guy. That's what caused me to laugh.
I've in the last 2-3 years, I've watched plenty of TV shows, but not a lot of movies.
I assume you know Men in Black, the reference with the memory wiper where they click the light and it flashes and it wipes
yeah.
your memory.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of hilarious that a rain delay did that for Holger Rune, because after the match, he's talking with Mortelu and he's like, oh, I thought my mindset was perfect. Like, I was so stable. And it's like, dude, did you watch the second set? Like, maybe after the rain delay, it was a good third set, but like, we still got some things to work on. Yeah, it was like, again, it discussed, you mentioned this early in this podcast episode, his excitement in facing Djokovic and getting the chance to test himself against the best. Like, that's all Holger Rune wants to do. And even through the emotional pitfalls, like, that emotion comes from a place of desire, as he pointed out, to chase perfection. Like, it reminds me of a young Andy Murray or any of those young players you want to point to who, a young Sabalenka, would wear their emotions on their sleeve. And you knew what the highs could be, but you'd have to suffer through some of the lows as well. And again, you saw all of that within the framework of three sets and a rain delay, and the guy beat Novak Djokovic, and the guy makes a Wimbledon quarterfinal as well. And again, like, has all of these different successes at 19 years old. They showed you all aspects. Like, if you
yeah.
didn't know anything about Holger Rune before knowing this, watching this episode, you should learn more about his tennis, because there's a lot there to be excited about as well that would gain better context. But you know his narrative arc. Like, this told the Holger Rune story.
Yeah, and there is reference to the end of last year was really incredible. Then we struggled at the start of this year. Now, they kind of skipped. The real turnaround was when he hit the clay, Monte Carlo, Munich title.
Sure.
Skip that, and Rome does the trick, beats Djokovic, gets the point across that he's kind of has this recovery. And then the kind of tie together with the Alcaraz match, and they were kind of keeping tabs on Alcaraz throughout the episode. Nothing major.
Quickly on that, one of my highlights as well, everyone in the room in Rome watching Alcaraz versus Marazan. That was, I mean, that's tennis tournaments in a nutshell. Like, if someone good is losing, everyone's going to, it's like it's a car crash. You're all going to give it a little gawk. And then, yeah, once it happens, everyone reacts. Like, that was awesome.
What a scene that was.
What a scene.
Rome, it must have been just Rome players, player dining.
Yeah,
And you had Zverev out there. You had Tiafo out there, who seemed to really be enjoying himself, by the way.
And then in the corner, you had Mrs. Runa like, you know, Marazan, he is the point today. Like, you know, I just thought Carlos was playing too much and Fabian was the point.
Exactly. Runa Alcaraz match at Wimbledon, straight set win for Alcaraz. You know, I still would love a little bit more. Not going to get it, right? But I would love just a little bit of color on maybe what Holger felt like went wrong in that match beyond what he said. Or maybe get Courier in here, explain what happened in the match. Like, he's very good at that. But no, we just get Runa saying that Carlos handled the mental side better, which is basically how every single result is explained in Breakpoint.
Well, you're right. It would have been nice to get some tactical breakdown, 100%. It's indicative into Runa's mindset. Again, it couldn't have been the tennis, right? Because Runa's as good at tennis as anyone. It had to be the mental side that he just wasn't prepared to execute at the degree he needed to be able to. And again, maybe that's where if he had some other voices, stronger voices in his camp who could push back against that and say, actually, tactically, maybe this is what we needed to do. And I think that's what Mortoglu is intended to be. Like, that's going to be a big thing for him moving forward. But that was indicative of, like, in his mind, it wasn't the tennis. It was mentally, he wasn't prepared for that stage. Carlos is now. But to your point, let's check the stats at the end of our careers.
Yeah. And then it ends. So Alcaraz beats him. Alcaraz wins Wimbledon. Ends with this very cinematic scene with Runa, I think in Denmark, but who knows? A beautiful place. He looked like Luke Skywalker, like on the edge of a cliff. Like, I don't know which Star Wars movie started / ended with like Luke Skywalker, like looking out into some vast abyss.
The eighth one, the last Skywalker. Or
there you go. See, I'm very, very cultured. Yeah, and then that's when he has the line. I'm happy to give him a 2-0 lead, but let's count when our career is over. So let's backtrack. That was the tennis. I think we've covered enough how it was kind of interesting what they did. Just Indian Wells round three, Djokovic win in Rome, Wimbledon quarterfinal. But you have the coaching stuff, which for Runa is particularly interesting for a couple reasons. One, there was changes, there was volatility, but also, no, you do have someone with name recognition and some larger interest in Patrick Mouratoglou, who was used as a talking head in season one, and now he's in the story here in season two for this episode. Runa splits with Patrick, basically says, like, I feel like he just accused him of just sitting there and not doing anything. Was that, I guess, the accusation, and he felt like he needed someone else? Then he calls him back. He brings him back. I mean, what did you think of this arc of Patrick, you're fired, Patrick, you're hired, all in the span of like 1 month?
When they had the shot of Mouratoglou in whatever car it was, the back of the car, driving back into Rome like a conquering hero, I was ready to set my computer on fire. Like, I was like, this is the most ridiculous, like, glorification, heroification, whatever the word is, of someone who just does not deserve like that sort of lore. Like, this is ridiculous. And look, when he goes, you know, I worked with Serena for 10 years, and introducing himself, that's like someone who went to Harvard working. Yeah, you know, I went to Harvard, and in the first 10 seconds that you're talking to him, I got two of those in my family, by the way, although they don't talk about it because we all know. Anyways, I just, like, here's the thing. He has a big personality. That is very clear throughout the course of this episode. Kind of have to deal with Holger. Like, you need to be confident in your conviction. Say, you know, fine, don't listen to me. I guess you're going to break up with me. I guess that's just how it's going to be. I'm going to be fine without it. Like, you do have to have those sorts of confidence in your convictions to work with someone like Holger Rune. And it's very clear that Mortoglu has that. Again, he tells hard truths to his face. Like, he was willing to amp up the drama when he knew he was mic'd up. Obviously, during the course of that Indian Wells match, his disappointment was very clear. It's a fascinating relationship. Like, it was worth showing. It was just like, again, it would have been nice to see them work on court more frequently just to know, hey, here's what he's saying to him, actually. Like, I would have liked to see more Rune Mortoglu talking directly with one another as opposed to just talking to the cameras.
Fair enough. I felt like it was very... It was a very indicative and accurate portrayal of kind of what the whole Patrick Mouratoglou deal is, right? Yeah. Especially because some people accuse him of just like sitting in a player's box when they go on a run just to be there and show face, just to be that presence. The reality is Mouratoglou is a presence, and he does seem to just always be around and kind of in the mix. So I just thought it was kind of funny when Rune accused him of basically just sitting there and doing nothing, because that's the same thing that like people on Twitter accuse him of doing, of just kind of riding the coattails a little bit. That's kind of like the Mouratoglou criticism du jour, I would say. I just hope we get more from this. Here's what I'll say. I hope that this is paid off. Because the dynamic between Lars Christensen, who is Holger Rune's childhood coach and a very technical kind of analytical guy, and Patrick Mouratoglou, who I think is a little bit more big picture mentality, somebody very Nick Bollettieri-like, instills confidence in his students or clients, whatever you want to call them, players. I don't think that worked last year. And Annika Rune has since been on the record saying things like egos got in the way last year of having kind of a stable coaching dynamic between Holger, Lars, and Patrick. I just hope we get that, because I like that it kind of showed the unique player coach dynamic. The fact that Holger was like, yeah, I fired Patrick. I just thought that it wasn't really right. It wasn't really working. And then, yeah, I decided to rehire him. I brought him back. I kind of like that window into how weird and crazy tennis is. It's the only sport where players do that. I would like them to now go a step further. I want to see how that kind of ballet, that dance that is so delicate when you have two coaches for one player, how that kind of broke down and ended up backfiring on Holger last year.
Really well said.
Any moments that we need to cover before we wrap this up?
We didn't talk enough about Alcaraz, who this episode introduced but didn't give us enough of, and I'm hoping there's more of him, again, in future episodes throughout the course of the season. I've only watched the first two thus far, but you can't just give us a hint of Alcaraz. You can't just show him beating Djokovic in that final, and I do wonder how much of that is language-centric, because obviously his answers are going to be in Spanish, which I got no problem reading subtitles. That's how I'm watching these shows anyways. He is the man. You talk about the future is yours. This guy with two slam titles. The only person to beat Novak Djokovic at a major last year was Carlos Alcaraz in that five-set Wimbledon final. Could have had its own episode. It got the last 5 minutes in an episode primarily about a different player. Like, again, you saw the intrigue in that player lounge when Carlos Alcaraz lost. Everyone is looking to him as the guy to chase in the future as well. Like, there's just more meat on that bone. And to have a quote from him in this episode of, you know, one of his purposes is just to play with joy. Like, that so perfectly epitomizes Carlos Alcaraz. And you opened up, like, they did that early in the first 15 minutes of the episode. And so I got my hopes of like, oh, we're going to get both. And we didn't. And maybe that perhaps then we've actually perfectly portrayed the Alcaraz tease we got in this episode by just teasing it here at the end. But that would be the only thing I'd have left from this episode is they opened up the Alcaraz storyline. And I hope there's more payoff because it's intriguing.
Okay, a couple things. First of all, the U.S. Open, there was a U.S. Open episode, I guess it was Tiafo, in the last season, where I think we felt pretty much the same way.
Sure.
Where they went half in on Alcaraz, right? They were like, okay, we're going to cover him, we're going to do him, but it doesn't feel like all of our chips are on the table, full system go. We're getting into it. We're diving into Alcaraz. You're right. It feels like every time they do it, it's kind of, you know, 25%. Now, sometimes that can be effective. We talked again in the last season about how kind of them not doing Nadal was a perfect way to do Nadal.
Sure.
So maybe there's a little bit of that.
Maybe
it comes down to access.
Yeah.
I don't
That's
know.
That's
like,
my biggest fear.
Do you think Ferrero and the team is like, yeah, we don't really want cameras
around? Well, you heard Courier talk about in episode one, it's absolutely a distraction. And I just wonder, because he's like, we talked about this when this match actually happened, and that's why it's not unforgivable, but so surprising, certainly, that they only spent 5 minutes on it. Everyone in my life who's a sports fan, not tennis fans, everyone in my life who's a sports fan texted me on that day and said, dude, who is this Alcaraz guy? And what did he just do to Djokovic? Like, everyone, that was a moment in the sporting world, not just the tennis world. It was a moment when tennis penetrated the broader sporting narrative arcs, and everyone was talking about what happened in that Wimbledon final. And, you know, again, obviously they play another one in Cincinnati later in the season. Maybe that's something they talk about in a later episode, because those two going head to head, that's one of the most memorable things from 2023. And I can't just get a 5 minute taste. I need a 15-minute story arc on it in one of these episodes.
We'll see if we get it. I feel like, again, we don't know, and I think we'll know by the end of the season, especially hopefully we do some good interviews with people who had a hand in making the show at the end of this. But it feels like Alcaraz's circle is the type that would be like, yeah, we don't need this. Like,
yeah.
And it that's rare, because I think you could go through the top 10 and you're going to find maybe Novak and Alcaraz, probably the only players, maybe Medvedev, just because of their vibes. They're just like, nah. Could do without it. But we're certainly glad that Holger was able to let Netflix behind the curtain, because I thought this was a good episode. And through two episodes in season two, I think this is a better show than it was last season. I've been really happy with it.
I'll leave you with one final thought, Gil. Some people want to play the future. I want you to be the future, Gil, because the future is yours.
Some people record the podcast.
Yeah. We are the podcast.
We got to
be the podcast.
Breakpoint Season 2, Episode 2. The future is yours. This has been the Breakpoint Recap Show on Gil Gross YouTube and the Cracked Rackets Podcast Network.